And welcome to the show. So it's Tuesday, and this show is going out live on Mintwave Radio. So you can just ask Alexa or go to the website /mintwave-radio to listen in or see our schedule of other shows. If it's on the podcast, and again, the website, KarenRobertsCoaching.com/podcast-network to see not just mine, but other podcasts on our network. You can download the app for Apple and Android, and please subscribe to anything that you like and follow, or feel free to leave a comment. This is episode 116, and today we have Corby Mitfield. She is a psychic medium, channel, intuitive counselor, inspirational speaker, and we're going to be talking about how to clean out your life closet. So my name's Karen Roberts, I'm your host, and we provide a platform via Mintwave Radio and the Raising Vibrations podcast network for coaches and therapists and healers to get their message heard to the people who need to hear it. So, well, I'm going to allow you, Corby, to introduce yourself, because you do such an array of things and you've got such a fantastic story. So can you share with the listeners a little bit about who you are and what you do?
All right, that's the 30-second elevator speech. Hello out there. My name is Corby Mitlide, and I am a certified tarot master, past life specialist, psychic medium, channel, author, busy. Let's just say busy. Have been through, as they say in New York, the ringer. 3 bouts of breast cancer, 2 divorces, the death of my parents, rape, abuse, poverty. And this is what 68 can look like with all that, guys.
And you're looking special. Fantastic.
Fantastic. 2 magic words, no children. Takes 10 years off your lips right there. But the other thing is, truly, anybody can do what I do. It's simply a matter of your squint on things and learning to live the examined life. That's your key.
Can you repeat that? Hang on. Can you repeat that last bit?
Learning to live examined life.
The examined life. Interesting. Tell me more.
All right. The examined life comes into play, especially when you've got something happening that you don't want, and it's here and you can't get out of it. So the first thing is, what can I learn from it? My second thing, because I'm a teacher, is how can I teach with it? And the next answer is, next, you don't stay stuck in the story. With me, examined life really came into play on my third cancer dance. Notice I don't say I fought cancer, because what you fight fights back. And I am not a survivor, because I do more than hang on by teeth and toenails. A cancer dancer finds out how graceful they can be under pressure, avoids getting their toes stepped on, and gets off the dance floor in one piece. So when the doctor said, all right, you have a Dolly Parton figure, we know that, we're so sorry, but we're doing a double mastectomy, we're taking the ovaries, and you're going to be in 3 weeks a fat fire plug with permanent side effects, suck it up. Well, yeah, I went home and cried for 24 hours, I'm normal. But then I knew the rule, find 3 reasons to be okay with it, no matter how stupid they were. Number one, you don't have them, you can't get cancer there. Number two, the top half is not going to be slammed in the refrigerator door at the doctor's every year. And every woman listening knows exactly what I'm talking about. Implants, cool. I'll be perky till I'm 93. There, had the double mastectomy at Massachusetts General Hospital, walked out in 3 days, shopped for a bathing suit in 5. It's 18 years, and this is where it is. That's wow. The examined life.
But that is not the normal reaction for many people. So can you share, how did you get to that stage where you were able to dig in your toolbox and find the tools to be able to respond in that way? After, obviously, we're all human and it's perfectly natural and healthy to release and cry and that, but you pulled yourself together, pulled your big girl pants up. But again, I mean, it's such a massive thing to be able to turn things around mentally. That didn't happen overnight.
No. No, I was really stupid until my mid-40s, I have to say. But when you have had a roller coaster, no breaks life the way I did. Constant change, constant pain, constant having to land on my feet after difficult situations. You look for tools. And the best tools I found were at a place called the Option Institute in Massachusetts. It's pretty much winding down now because the founders are in their 80s. But they taught me the importance of three questions. What am I X about? And X is whatever the emotion is, afraid, angry, confused. Why am I X about that? But the question we never ask ourselves, what do I think would happen if I stopped being X about that? So let's just take that situation. What am I upset about that? I just got married a year and a half ago, and now I'm going to completely lose my looks. Why are you upset about that? Because I have no idea if my husband will still stay, if people will accept me. Okay, Corby, what do you think would happen if you stopped being upset about that? I'd be able to look at it and move forward under my choice. See, we never ask ourselves that third question, giving ourselves an opportunity to look at things differently. We think we're stuck, but we don't have to be.
And it all comes from programming. We are conditioned, or, you know, we yes. have conditioned ourselves into mm-hmm. responding in a certain way. And asking yourself specific questions, allowing space, I suppose, for the answer to come up, because it's nobody can tell you, I suppose. It's got to come no. from within. And if you don't ask the question, then the answer's not going to come.
Exactly. Most of us run stimulus response. You hit me, I hit you. The key is the word belief. Stimulus, belief, response. Because whatever happens to us, it is a neutral. I use the example, let's say it's raining. Rain is a neutral. And you have three people. One father who is on vacation with his kids. It's only a week and it's raining the entire time. So a lot of what he planned can't be done. Me, I'm in my office. The cats are on the cat tree. I don't care. Farmers in my home county, if it's been a drought for 3 months, they're out dancing in it. The rain does not care. Now, what if people change their ideas? If the man on vacation says, you know, I've been wanting to show my kids the Peter Sellers movies, the Inspector Clouseau movies for years, now's our chance, and he makes a big thing out of it. So he decides to make it a positive thing. I'm still in my office and I still don't care. There's that one farmer in Schoharie County who says, damn it, if it had only held off for another 2 weeks, I would have gotten a big insurance payment. He hates the rain. And the rain doesn't care.
Yeah,
we can change that. How we look at things, and then we change the entire situation.
Brilliant. And that is it, I suppose. It's everything is down to our perception. So we have a choice, I suppose. Is that, that's what we are as human beings. We have free will, but maybe we don't use it actually, because it's, I mean, it's, I get it, it's an automatic response. So unless you're aware of what you're doing, you're just reacting to the negative. So until you can question yourself, so I suppose, again, you know, that's all links in with the self-development arena of just, when you ask yourself something, that means you're going to use your critical mind to question, to come up with an answer. Otherwise, yeah, you're going to just react and be angry, or I can't do this. And why is it that we focus on the negative?
Because for one thing, I don't know how it is where you are, but in the States, victim mentality gets you new houses, gets you television shows, gets you all of that. And if people don't realize we're hurting, we're convinced they're not going to care. So we have to push the negative in their face. When we decide it doesn't matter whether they help me or not, it's nice if they do, but I'm the one who's in charge, then we stop having to beat ourselves up and be negative. You know, I use the example of the happy Martian detective. If you and I were sitting apart from each other and you had water coming out of your eyes, I might say to you, why are you crying? But I could be wrong. Now, Gleeble the Martian, who lands and has been assigned, go learn about humanity, toddles out of his spaceship and looks at you and says, why is there water coming from your eyes? And Gleeble might get a better answer because maybe your contact lenses are bugging you, or maybe you have an allergy, or maybe there's an emotional basis. Because he didn't think he knew, didn't make a judgment on what he saw. He opened himself up to all possibilities. When we do not judge what things are like, we just ask. We can learn more. You know, to go to the woo-woo part, as you say, we call it wiki-woo over here. It's like karma. People think karma is bad and good. No, karma is actually five things. Healing, service, contrast, unbalanced energy, and healing of beliefs. And I worked on that with Robert Schwartz in his book series on pre-birth planning and life between life. And the example I always love to use is Ryan White. Ryan was the kid who in the late 80s, early 90s, got AIDS before we really understood what it was about. He got it from a blood transfusion. But in those days, you get AIDS, you're a pariah, you're a horrible, you're a monster. And that's what his family was treated like here in America. But who became friends with him? Elton. Elton loved the family. Elton played at Ryan's funeral. He died at 18. Was so inspired by Ryan that that's when Elton got off the drink, the drugs, all of the stuff that he's been off for 30 some years, and started the Elton John AIDS Foundation, which since then has raised $500 million for HIV and AIDS research. Now, in the old days, when you think kindergarten, it's good karma, bad karma. Ryan White must have been terrible. Look at all that bad karma. But when you understand that his soul, his higher self said, look, that incarnation could be tough and short, but look at the good that could come out of it. Ryan White's karma was actually that of service. When you open yourself up to not just the negative, but all possibilities, there's a lot of gorgeousness that you would have missed otherwise.
That's massive. And again, it's that takes a very strong, calm, open person to accept that. So that, I suppose, you know, what I was hearing from that is accepting the, you know, what is, the isness of what is. And then, yeah, looking for, asking the question again. I suppose it really is all about going within and keep asking the question, what you know, that, and there was something positive, as incredibly sad as it was, but something positive that come out of it. Elton John does. I mean, I was speaking to somebody in New Zealand yesterday and they went to an Elton John concert. And I mean, how old is he? And he was still up there performing at his best, like 2 hours on stage, really giving it his all. What a phenomenal man. And you don't, you know, he doesn't get in the, you know, you don't hear much about him. He keeps himself to himself, but he's out there doing so much.
And
so
supporting the up and coming, like Dua Lipa, that wonderful duet he did with her. Elton is an example of someone who lives the examined life. A lot has happened to him that wasn't great, but it's no pity party. It's how can I learn from it? Which is not to say, because a lot of people think, you mean it was good that he got AIDS? No, it's not necessarily good. But when you've got something, how can you work with it? You know, that's where it comes down to.
Yeah, if you can't do anything about it, then you have two choices: to either accept it and move on and live as happy as you can a life within that time, because what's the alternative?
that's one of the reasons that what I tell people is you have to move on to next. I know women that 15 years ago had stomach cancer, and when they introduced themselves, hi, my name is Mary Ellen and I'm a cancer survivor. Well, when I was a senior in high school in 1973, I was the Betty Crocker homemaker of tomorrow for New Jersey. I'm not that person anymore, so I don't talk about it. So who are you now? How have you moved forward? What do you want to grab hold of today? That's where you put your energy.
Yeah. Well, I suppose their own, it's almost like they get that you know, somebody that they perceive mm-hmm. is in authority has mm-hmm. told them this thing and they've totally owned it from that moment forward. And yeah, I like the way you're, because it is, it's interesting that it's the verbiage that we use to ourselves. Because who's listening? Who's listening? Exactly. We are listening to ourselves. So mm-hmm. yeah, I suppose for some people, they may feel that that's actually a positive statement saying I'm a cancer survivor, but actually, move on.
Yeah, you've been there for 15 years. What have you done lately? You know, because again, that's the whole victim thing that we were talking about. You know, see, aren't you sorry for me? Perception is everything. It's like, I lost a reality show because they wanted me to say, oh, world said that nobody in the world could do what you do, blah, blah, blah. I said, hold on. I have always told people, I'm not special. You can do what I do. That's a lie. They shrugged. They went on to somebody else. It was not worth whatever money and the 15 minutes of fame to lie about everything that I believe.
But that's your values and your mm-hmm. own. Yeah. Exactly. And you stood up for them. And and I'm sure you would have got something else back round at some other point because you did that. So mm-hmm. wonderful.
Yes.
Wonderful. So when we talk about, we're talking about how to clean out your life closet.
Yes.
What do you mean, Corby? Okay. What do you mean?
Well, for one thing, here's the book. This is the book. And the idea is, I mean, I would pay 50 quid to anybody who can literally raise their hand and say, I have never read a self-help book, because we all have. And to this day, I remember the first paragraph of the first self-help I bought in 1968 when I was 13. First paragraph was, Judy has a groovy wardrobe. Sorry, guys, it's the 60s. Her hair is fab and her makeup is far out. But nobody likes Judy because Judy's fat. Right there, hundreds of thousands of young girls were told, you are worthless unless you're thin. And that's what self-help books do. One of the ones that I researched before I wrote this one said that you had to get up every morning and do yoga and avoid food with leptin. I'm sorry, but if you are a single mom with two kids in Milwaukee and you have a job, you are not going to have time to do that. So instead, I wrote a book that said, here's some of the dumb things I did. Here's some examples. But at the end, they have adventure pages. So clarity, adaptability, simplicity, and making friends with stress are the four big subjects. Let's take a look at the idea about why perfect isn't what you think it is, because we all deal with perfection. Has perfect been a friend or foe in your life? Why? When did the search for perfection stop you from doing something important? How so? Think of a challenging situation and find three perfect things about it. How do your feelings about the situation change? Now, notice you can't turn to page 82 and see what I tell you you should think. You go into your own life and learn and make the changes. The whole idea is when you are in charge of your changes, all possibilities are yours as well. You decide what your life is going to be about, not some stranger on the other side of the page.
But this is the thing, isn't it? That everyone's looking to be saved. They're all looking for an answer outside mm-hmm. of them. And actually, you have the answer yourself, but you're not asking the right questions.
That's the whole point. The way I put it is when you look to yourself for your own answers, you completely honor the path you've been on. And you realize you've never done anything wrong. You've done the best you can based on your belief systems. You can turn your life into a journey of love and creativity and positivity and self-love, because until we've got that, everything else is a bargaining chip. You don't love yourself, you will never love the world.
And whatever you do, you might get temporary change or temporary improvements, mm-hmm. but it's not going to last. But why do you think that so many, and I'm not saying it's just women, but
everybody,
you know, women, everybody will. It's almost like we can be so hard on ourselves and we come last. And then some people have feelings of guilt or shame if they actually spend time on self-care. But like what you've just said there, it all starts. It all starts with self-care.
It is. Women have a much harder time with it. And the example I use is your two. There's this white thing with silver things on top, and you went and you reach and your mother goes, bad, hot. Well, that makes sense. You're four. There's a plate of biscuits. You're a smart kid. You know there's more in the big biscuit than the little biscuit. So you reach for that. Your mother goes, bad, selfish. And so you're not even going to get a biscuit. And she gives the one you want to your little brother who eats it at you. And then doubles the pain by saying, besides, girls who eat biscuits get fat. Nobody likes a fat girl. Do you really want to be fat? So we are subliminally taught by the time we're like five or six, if we want anything, we're wrong, we're bad, we'll be punished, and we'll have to watch somebody else get what we want. Which is why when women come to me in their 40s and 50s, and what am I going to do with my life? You know, I'm divorced or the kids are grown or whatever. I said, well, what do you want? And they look at me and they go, I don't know. And I say, if you had to guess, I don't know. It's because you have to learn you're allowed to want. And not getting what you want doesn't mean you're bad for wanting it. I want a slice of watermelon. Oh, the store was out of it. Am I bad for wanting watermelon? No, I buy a cantaloupe. You know, it's simply that.
We are so hard on ourselves when you put it like that. I mean, yes, that all totally makes sense because, it's all, none of us do it to ourselves deliberately. It's all some kind of unconscious programming. Mm-hmm. But then when you step back and look at that, you just think, man, we're silly. Oh, how silly we are.
Yes, which is why going right back to living the examined life, looking at how we respond and why we respond that way, and allowing ourselves to make a different choice, whether we're 14 or 84, it is never too late to choose differently. Never.
And that, and so like you say, you don't have to be stuck. Because it can seem so, everything can seem so permanent to some people when they're in a specific situation and they are struggling and they can't see outside of it because they are totally in the story, you know, caught up. And it seems so permanent. But like you say, it can often just be one different choice that can be, okay, it's not going to happen. Oh, bing. You're not magic.
Ding, remember, change. What's the game? Jenga? You pull one thing and the whole thing breaks apart. That one different choice can break apart all the conditioning and beating yourself up that you have done for decades.
Beating yourself up. That is a big thing, I think, that many people do, and men and women, right?
And you know why we do it? Because if we hurt ourselves, at least we know where the pain's coming. If someone else hurts us, it's a surprise as well as pain. That's why we do these things.
It's amazing, isn't it? Our minds are absolutely fascinating that they can come up to some of these conclusions that obviously, we're not consciously thinking about. But how do they find that? Again, I suppose it's just more questions. Is it how do they really get to the... How do they really know which thing is the thing?
It's learning to question. For one thing, you must remind yourself, nothing is wrong with me and nothing ever was. It is simply a matter of changing my belief systems. If I believe beating myself up before anyone else does saves me pain, I'm going to continue doing it. When I shift and say, if I don't beat myself up, there are going to be situations where A, there's no pain at all, and B, I can turn away the pain from somebody else, say, I'm sorry, I'm not accepting that. You know, one of the, I call them my magic phrases that I teach to a lot of my clients, when somebody else is telling you how they feel and they expect you to agree with them and you don't, but they keep beating on you, the magic phrases are, thank you for sharing. You may think that if you wish. Notice you're not disagreeing with them, but you're not buying it, and then you go and you do what you want.
Right. Instead of confronting them or trying to argue the point or put your opinion across, you're just, you know, that's your opinion. Move on. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's this instinct to want to defend my, that why I'm right or why I think you're wrong. It seems to be such an automatic response.
The other thing I tell people is what I call the duty head defense. D-O-O-D-Y-H-E-A-D. You would not argue with a four-year-old who is trying to convince you of something, and then when you simply are not buying it, they come and they kick you in the shins and they go, you are such a duty head! No. You would not go, oh my God, I'm a duty head. How am I going to handle that? No. You would whack the kid on the butt. You'd put him in the corner for a timeout, or you'd laugh and say, well, when you're done with your tantrum. You wouldn't buy into it. So the duty head defense is when somebody is being really unreasonable, in your mind, turn them into a four-year-old. All of a sudden, you will really relax with what's happening.
Why do we take on other people? It's like I was saying the other day. So I've had my pink braid since I was about 30, or just at young, about the last 20 odd years. Mm-hmm. And I moved to Portugal and I had my pink braids, and this older Portuguese guy came up to me and went, I can't think where I was. I might have been in a cafe. Aren't you a bit old for that? And I was really taken aback. But silly me, I went home and I took them out. Why would I? Like, obviously, now they're back and I don't care. But it's fascinating for me to look back and go, why did I allow that one person who has no attachment to me? I wouldn't recognize him if he came up and shook my hand, but I allowed his personal opinion of what I look like to affect me so much that I made a change. Now, looking back, I think I must have been crazy, but why do we do things like that?
You pretend you're that guy and you say to me what he said to you and watch my answer.
Aren't you a bit old to be looking like that?
Oh, thank you for sharing. You may think that if you wish, and then you go on. And he goes, but, and he goes, but behind you. But, you know,
You know, aren't you simple?
Aren't you?
That's all it needed to do.
Yeah.
Whereas I took it to heart and made me fit. It's amazing how we give our power away sometimes and allow.
Men are allowed to judge women. We're not allowed to judge men. Older is allowed to judge younger. Younger is not allowed to judge older. That's where all that comes from. That's old paradigm. Look, I was born in 1955. I don't live the way everybody did in 1955. I've moved on. For one thing, I've become an elder, not a boomer. And that's huge. You know what a boomer is, yes?
Yeah.
No?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
For those who don't, boomers are people born between 1945 and 65. They're the ones who say, well, we had the best music and we had the great cars and we had the best clothing and you guys don't know what you're doing and you're just lazy and blah, blah, blah. And I call them, I say, how dare you? When we went to school, we didn't worry about being shot to death in the hall. We didn't think that the world might be uninhabitable in our lifetime. We never worried that no matter how hard we worked, we wouldn't even have enough money for a roof over our head and food. And we didn't worry about a plague that nobody could stop and would kill us. Kids today have so much more to deal with than we did. So much more. So how do you be an elder? You realize you step off the stage. You get out of the spotlight and let them come onto it. Mm-hmm. You don't pontificate to them. If they ask you for information, you give it to them politely. And you accept the fact that they may not agree.
Yeah.
And you learn to be a third trencher. Now, what's that? World War I, first trench, everyone went over the top. Second was the reserves. Third trench is where the medicine was and the food. Elders as third trenchers, if they're going to do a food drive for the homeless, we pack the bags and do the dishes. We let them stand in front of the microphone. We let them take the television. We let them do the advertising. We let the millennials and the Gen Zs put their stamp on the event, not us. And that is hard for my generation to do, but it's necessary.
Right. And it's, yeah, I suppose it's almost like even as a parent, you want to tell them, you know, tell them, give them advice and that. But again, it's a similar kind of thing. You've got to allow them. You can maybe do some pointers, but you've got to allow them the space to make their own decision. It's their journey. It's their journey.
And you can start doing that when they're six. Remember the three questions I taught you? Let's say that little Josh comes home and he's stomping around and mom says, how was today at school? I hate my teacher. Wow. How come you're mad at your teacher? Because she gave us too much homework. Why does that make you mad? Because then I won't be able to go out and play. Now, notice it was, how are you feeling? Why are you feeling that way? She's not trying to correct yet. Then she says, how do you think, what do you think would happen if you stopped being mad about that? I don't know. If you had to guess. They don't know. If you say, if you had to guess, that lets them say what they were saying. I guess I could do it and maybe go out. Okay. How do you feel about that? Okay. Now, what you have just done is you haven't beaten the kid up emotionally. You have let him understand his own emotions and make a concrete decision that makes life better for him. When you start that young, then they will grow up with the ability to look at a situation and make a decision on how they want to feel and how best to deal with it. Instead of, they'll learn to respond, not react. That's the key phrase right there.
And rather than telling them, nobody wants to. Do you ever like to be told what to do? I certainly don't like to be told what to do. However, again, what I heard from that conversation is then it allowed that child to make the decision for himself. You know, he came to his own conclusion. So you didn't need to tell him. He made the decision himself. So it seems all about allowing, creating space for people to come to their own.
Learning self-trust, because when we trust ourselves, we don't need a self-help book. We don't need to be told what to do. We're not afraid of making our own decisions.
But that's been beaten out of us, hasn't it? Learning to trust ourselves, even as a child in school, if you're daydreaming or not, you get told to, you know, come back in. We're almost taught not to trust our intuition. And hopefully things, I think, are changing, that, you know, people are understanding, actually, go with your gut every single time. Your gut knows best.
Your gut knows best, but it always helps when you can be a little logical about where your gut is going. That's the key. And yes, it was beaten out of us. I found some of my own report cards from when I was 5, 6, 7, 8. And in those days, if you were extremely smart and you were bored in class, they didn't recognize that you probably should have jumped a grade. They were, she's lazy. She's a waste of space. She doesn't do her work. She's sloppy. And when that's what you're told all your life, you begin to believe it, even though the truth is, you really are so bored in this class. If we jumped you a grade, if we gave you some other extra work, you'd bloom. People are understanding that now, but they didn't for my generation.
Again, it's the focus on the negative rather than looking at everyone's trying to put people down, as opposed to what could be, you know, how could you be different if this was to happen or you were given this. But
shoehorning people in our generation, your colored braids, no, piercings, no, tattoos, no. And these are all merely ways for gender fluidity, God, no. These are all merely ways for people to find out who they truly are. And everyone has that right.
And I think things are changing now. Do you not think things, do you think things are getting better?
Absolutely. Yes, they are. But I'm saying in my generation, all of that would have been no, which is why we were so regimented. I applaud the weirder you are, the better, if that's what you want. Me? Yeah. I don't want a tattoo. I don't like needles and pain. You want to have tattoos? Cool.
Yeah, live and let live. It's just the old, it's just all back to, come on, you know, these lessons that are out there and we hear them, but we might not sort of actually respond using them. live and let live. Mm-hmm. You know, it's your choice. Yeah. It's not your, they're not hurting you, are they? If they have a tattoo, they're not going to have to do you as well.
Your choice doesn't make me wrong in any way. It's just your choice. Separate them out.
Mm. We're all different. Well, we need to all celebrate our differences, really. Right, so there. You do such an array of things. So I know you sort of say that, you know, you always felt like you were the different one.
Yes.
Can you share a little bit of why did you feel like that and what was going on?
My father was a cardiologist. My mother was a nurse. My brother is a pulmonologist. I was an actress and a writer. I could have tap danced on the dining room table and recited Shakespeare. They would not have seen me, really. So I went to one of our Ivy League universities, left after 2.5 years, couldn't find myself there, had the kind of life that my family felt was just failure after failure. But I was simply finding out who I was. And the fact that I've had lots of different careers, actress, author, inspirational speaker, video producer, legal assistant, writer for the graphic novel series ElfQuest, executive recruiter, all of that taught me what my skills were. And I use everything that I learned from doing those in the intuitive work I do now. It's why I have such a wide range of things I can do. Standard readings, yes. I mean, people come to psychics for 4 things, really. The everyday tour bus, which is house, car, job, kids. Okay, gotcha, put me here. What the hell? Past lives. Who was I in 1642 Belgium? I want to talk to my spirit guide, Binky, and has dead Aunt Mabel. That's where it is. Look, I've done stand-up comedy about you think a psychic's life is easy.
No. Brilliant. But love that. Love that. Yeah. And it's true.
It is. But there are other things they come to us for that we're not supposed to answer. I will not tell you what your purpose is because I haven't lived your life, met your challenges, found your creativity. So I have something called Create Your Sentence of Passion, which helps you figure out what you want to tell God you did while you were down here. I have Finding Your North Star, which is looking at all of the information and seeing how you can best direct it. It's not just what you think a typical psychic medium does. When you are a spiritual counselor, when you've been through everything I've been through, you see so many arrows in your quiver that you can help people find their bullseye with. But it all comes down to, I assist you. We do it together. Anybody who sits down with me and says, hi, I'd like a reading. I don't know, just tell me anything you see. I'm sorry, that's like trying to climb Everest in sneakers. There's no grip. I will not, if you say, I want to know about my career, put down 4 cards and go, well, wait until October and fire the redhead. What? You say, I want to open up my own broadcast studio. It would be a card for you, a card for any partners you have, a card for the energy around the business, the brick and mortar location, how to market it, clients, competition, staff, finances, what you need to know and best possible outcome. I teach my clients, don't ask yes or no questions, because if it's no, it gives you nowhere to go. Ask specific. Empowering. How do I? How do I? If you say, does Bruce love me? I'm going to say, let's look at the relationship. You, 95% of the questions. You, Bruce, the relationship, what you need to know and best possible outcome. And if you still go, I don't know, then I pull what I call 3 threes. 3 cards for status quo. Y'all just bumble along, but you don't make changes. 3 cards for what they say in the South is the come to Jesus meeting. You do serious counseling, line in the sand, you make changes. And hostile, bye-bye, it's been nice, but I'm leaving. Those are your 3 options. The only time I will tell you which one to choose is if you tell me you're abused, beaten, gaslit. Then the reading turban comes off, the pastoral counseling collar goes on, and I will help you get out of that dangerous situation. Other than that, I don't care if leave has the Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice sign. If you say, I guess I'll stick it out, that's your free will, baby.
I take free will. Off. There you go.
That's how free, we learn.
It's all back to free will. And yeah, mm-hmm. I suppose nobody can tell you. But But how does it, I'm sort of fascinated by it. So I don't come from a woo-woo background at all. Very physical.
Okay.
But I want to. It fascinates me. Okay. But So how does it work? I mean, how old were you when you realized that you had this? And I, when I say gift, and I agree, I do think all humans, we have the ability. I just haven't learned how to yet.
Okay.
But how did, how, where were you? What were you doing when you realized you had this gift? Or did you go specifically to learn it?
No. When I was 9, I read a book called The Witch Family by Eleanor Estes. And I thought, oh, there's magic in the world. I want to go find it. Fast forward to 1973, when I was a senior in high school. Spencer Gifts had the James Bond 007 tarot deck, and I bought it because we were all hippies then. We had our elephant bell bottoms, the David Crosby fringe jacket, and the deck. 5 years later, everybody else had moved on to roller skates and disco balls. I was still fascinated by the cards. So for 20 years, I read for friends, keeping my ego out of the way, being clear. All of a sudden in the early 90s, I could do hands-on healing and talk to dead people with no training. That's when the universe handed me my draft notice and said, hello, you're working for us. Did it part-time until 9/11. As my husband and I watched the towers burn, I turned to him and I said, I have got to do this work full-time. People need to know there are other answers out there. He looked at me and said, I believe in you. Go do it. Since then, it's 6 days a week, 14 hours a day. I read about 1,000 people a year, and I get to get up in the morning. I don't have to get up in the morning. That's the biggest key.
Wow. So is that, that's what you do? That's how you spend your day?
Full time, darling. Yes.
In between worlds.
For instance, today I have this podcast and I had six clients to read. And that's a typical day.
Wow. Wow. So you really are. I mean, how does it work? Do you ever get, you know, things coming through that, yeah, you want to tell them, but you didn't?
No, I don't. For one thing, I do not read you walking down the street. The agreement I have with my guides is the shop sign is closed until you sit down with me and one of three things happens. There's an energy exchange of money, because this is my living. We do a barter, you bring me a chicken, or I know that I'm doing it as pro bono, as a gift. And you know, it can be hard. I used to be on the road 45 weekends a year. My nickname was the Travel Channel, and that was before I got a back injury, which made, you know, I'm fine now, but I can't do all the heavy lifting and the long hours in the car. But I got my business all set up online. And 1 month later, what happened in February of 2020, but the advent of the years of Murder Hornet Bingo and Hold My Beer. So the universe had set it up for me brilliantly. Since then, my business has all been online. I read people all over the world. It's just gotten better. So that's another example of don't bitch about what happens. You know, what's happening? What can I learn from it? How can I move forward?
Absolutely. I mean, I know, obviously, you know, yes, it was awful. But again, we had no control.
We had no control.
So you have to find a way to accept it as is and find a way. Yes, I wouldn't be doing this. I wouldn't own the station. I own the station now. I wouldn't have this if that had happened. It forced me into a, what's the new word? It's pivot. Hang on.
Yes.
I pivoted. Yeah. It's the new word that really wasn't being used before. I pivoted.
Yeah.
Had an online summit because, yeah, I just needed something to do and just found that I'm nosy. I like asking questions. I want to know why are you doing what you're doing?
Look, this is brilliant and wonderful. I did a show for myself for about 3 years. And like you, I was a really good interviewer. But I realized I was making them look brilliant and I was chopped liver in the corner. So now I much prefer doing podcasts. I did over 100 last year because a perfect stranger invites me on. I get to shoot my mouth off to strange people for an hour, half an hour, and they find out who I am. I mean, that's fun. People say, why do you do so many podcasts? Because it's fun. So I totally get where you are.
Yeah, totally. I love it. I'm just getting a chat with all these amazing people with all these amazing skill sets and tools. And I'm just like, and that's how it happened, really. I mean, I woo woo. I was a therapist. I was a sports therapist. Very okay. I healed, but very physically. It was a physical. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, it's hurt when you do this, and not when you do it right. I've got an ego.
Yes.
I've got to fix. I want to fix you. It's not my job to fix them. It's not even me fixing them. It's you know, it's energy coming through me to fix it. But
that
you know,
is so important. Yes. You know. I don't know if people asked you, but they asked me, don't you get exhausted by doing this work all the time? The key is this, we're the tube it comes through. We're not the healer. And when you realize that, you just allow it to flow through. I'm sure you learned that yourself. And we don't get exhausted. We're grateful that we can do the work. But that's
no, I mean, I loved it, but I didn't know. I didn't understand all that. You know, we weren't taught about, you know, grounding yourself and protect your energy. We didn't talk about energy. This is the muscle. This is where it starts. This is where it ends. It'll hurt when you do this or this and not if you do that. So figure it out. What's wrong? Mm-hmm. Very ego-centric,
based.
You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, and I was taught fitness for a quarter of a century. So again, it's all about the body. It's all physical, physical, physical. So
yes,
my introduction into this was very sort of drip fed in, which is why it's called a sprinkling of woo woo, but we're into full scoops. It's not sprinkling anymore.
What was the big Dawn Breaks Over Marblehead moment for you when you said, I think there's more to this than just muscles?
Oh, what a question. I think before that, quite a way before that, I've always been, since I was introduced to the self-development arena, I suppose, so that was 20 years ago. But again, it was very physical because they kept saying about your thoughts become things and, you know, your thoughts manifest through you. Again, ego, 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 ego. So it took me quite a while to get it that, no, again, I'm trying to control things with my thoughts. And that's exhausting, isn't it?
Yes.
So the realization, but again, I've read it wrong. And I know it's not their fault. I was perceiving it as wrong. I should have read The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle a little bit more often to have the understanding. Now, actually, Karen, shh. And mentally, focus on how you feel and then it will come up. I realize I got it wrong for so long. So, yes, it took me a while. I must be a slow learner.
That's normal. No, that's normal. We learn it at the exact right moment when we get it, when we're ready to get it. So,
yeah. I find it fascinating. I mean, I'm a bit of a, so at some point when I have time, I will learn something in a little bit more depth, but I am all about frequency, but I say to people, I'm a cheat and I've got a little device that sends out frequencies where other people, when they've learnt Reiki and energy healing, they can tune in and do it. Well, I haven't learned that yet. So I'm a cheat and I openly admit, and I'll just use my little device.
No, you're not a cheat. You simply are using a different methodology. Is somebody a cheat if they do an automatic car instead of a manual? No, the car still goes, doesn't it?
Exactly. I like that thinking. Yes.
There you go. You can stop putting yourself down and saying, I do a cheat.
Ah, yeah, true. Again, verbiage. Well, yeah, well said. I've got to be careful the verbiage that I use to myself. Yeah, I've got to stop saying that.
I always say that words are my drug of choice. So I'm really, really careful about what I say and what I hear.
Yeah, well, it's so important. And for me, like the best thing that I ever did in the last 2 years since all the you know that thing that you can't really remember what happened in 2020? Something happened. I got rid of my television.
Ooh, that's best, a big one.
The best thing. I mean, look, I'm not going to lie. I can watch Netflix or Prime. I've got a projector there on the wall. Mm-hmm. But no terrestrial TV. the best thing I've ever done. Mm-hmm. I'm a bit slow on the uptake, even when major things, like even when our Queenie was a bit slow to pick up on things, must have caught it on Facebook. Mm-hmm. But from an energy standpoint, oh man, I can't even explain how much better I feel.
It so probably helped your concentration, because the more and more we've done social media and screens, et cetera, do you know that we now have an attention span that is less than a goldfish? Seriously, yeah. Goldfish have 12 seconds, we have 8. This is really sad.
What is going on, huh? Mm-hmm. It's just madness, really. The whole thing is madness. So for you, you've authored more than what? How many books have you authored?
Three. We have Plan Out Your Life Closet. We have probably my favorite, which is Psychic Yellow Brick Road, How to Find the Real Wizards and Avoid the Flying Monkeys. This is one, it does not teach you how to be a psychic. There are 6,000 books out there for that. This teaches you how to find a reputable psychic medium, ask the right questions, stay safe. Mm. And if you are crazy enough to want to do what I do, that's, you've got the magic who needs a genie. I wrote down every single thing I learned from being on the road for 18 years, 45 weekends a year. Why should you have to reinvent the wheel? That's crazy.
Wow. So for the listeners, if they want to get hold of any of those books, how are they going to find them? Are they on Amazon? Do they get
Amazon.
Them on your website?
Amazon. If you are in the US, you can get them in paperback. You might even be able to get Genie in paperback, because that's a print on demand from Amazon. Otherwise, yes, it's on Kindle. And if you like audiobooks, Clean Out Your Life Closet is an audiobook, and I read it for you. So there you go.
Oh, I'm going to get that. I'm sure I've got a couple of credits. I've got a couple of credits. I'm going to get that. Yeah.
Write a review. Guys, let me tell you, whether it's me or Karen or anybody else, reviews on Amazon are so important for the author, because until you have 50 of them, they shove your book on the back shelf behind the pickles. Nobody will know.
Well, there you go. So guys, can you repeat those three top titles? Because we'll have it underneath for anybody that's watching it. But if they're just listening.
Clean Out Your Life Closet. That's your self-help book on clarity, adaptability, simplicity, and making friends with stress. The Psychic Yellow Brick Road is how to find a safe and reliable psychic medium and use the information they give you. You've Got the Magic Who Needs a Genie is if you really do want to be a professional intuitive out on the circuit.
Oh, you don't have to be a professional, do you? Can't you just learn to do it for yourself?
You can, but then don't buy You've Got the Magic Who Needs a Genie because it's all about how to set up your booth and how to advertise. And you're not going to need to do that.
Oh, I see. No, I can't do that.
No, if you want to learn to do what we do, believe it or not, I'm going to talk to you about a book that isn't mine. It's called Opening to Channel by Sanaya Roman and Dwayne Packer. It's how I learned 30 some years ago. It's a great book. Teaches you how to ground, center, shield, and keep yourself safe while you learn.
And you say about keeping yourself safe. So can we just for a moment, I know we haven't got much longer, but what do you mean?
Look, people talk to me about Ouija boards. And I just roll my eyes and I say, playing with a Ouija board when you don't know how to ground, center, and shield is like throwing open your door in a strange neighborhood and yelling free beer. You don't know who's out there, but they heard you and you're coming. Yes, I know. Jane Roberts got Seth and Esther Hicks got Abraham starting with a Ouija board. But I have had to handle I've had to handle two hysterical teenagers who the first time they put their hands on the little planchet with no protection, nothing, and just said, who's there? All of a sudden the planchet spelled backwards very fast, I have an axe and I'm here to kill you. That was obviously not their Uncle Danny. And for everybody who says, but it's in the toy department, how dangerous can it be? Because this happens when I lecture, I say, okay, who here has a kid or a grandchild under 10? Hands go up. You, what's the kid's name? Bobby. How old is Bobby? Bobby's 8. Fine. Bobby comes to you and says, Grandma, I got all A's on my report card. You said we could get a toy. Let's go. And he drags you to the toy department and points to a box that says, my first chainsaw. It's in the toy department. You going to let him play with it by himself? I don't think so. So learn how to grant the Ouija board, and then you can use the tools. Yes.
I don't want to do a Ouija board. It's something I never tried as a kid.
There are other tools.
I can remember friends saying that I was like, no, mm-hmm. I'm not playing with that. No, thank you very much. So again, sort of about safety. Yes. So just like, I suppose, with energy, that's why some people are, they're expending their energy rather than being the channel and allowing it to flow so that it's not affecting their energy. I suppose.
Exactly. In that book, I have things about, this is what a spirit guide would say, this is what they wouldn't. So if you get spirit guides or angels, you'll know whether it's your ego or whether it's a real message.
Do you know, right, that's actually, I'm glad you said that, because that has been a thought of mine. How do you tell the difference? Because your ego mind is that, and how do you know if it's a spirit guide, an angel? I mean, do you see them? Okay. Do they tell you who they are?
Okay. Everybody has at least one angel with them from birth to death. They have our names in the back of their little tunics. I belong to Karen. Spirit guides grow and change as we do. They can be people we've loved that have passed on. They can be people we knew in other lives. They can be animal guides. They can be avatars. They can be energy signatures, ETs. But the key is, a spirit guide or angel will never put you down or chastise you. They will never pump up your ego at the expense of someone else. They will never tell you to do something that you know is illegal, immoral, harmful, or you would not necessarily do it. When you get that kind of information, put it aside. It's not true. They also will not tell you whether to buy the red car or the blue car. They don't care. They're here to help you with spiritual growth, not cup holders and what kind of, does it have leather or cloth interiors? They just don't care.
They're not their white noise. Let's just ask about the real things, the important things, the spiritual things.
Yes.
Your life. Okay. Mm-hmm. I could sit here and talk to you for hours. Love it. Absolutely love it. Thank you so much for being on the show. You've been a phenomenal guest. You've made me laugh. I've learned a lot. And it's been very informative as well. So I really appreciate your time today. To everybody else, guys, if there's any coaches out there, if you want to have your own radio show and not just be like, Corby's done with that side of things, she just wants to be a guest. But if you want to start your own radio show, maybe interview somebody like Corby, then get in touch with us. And other than that, for the rest of you, I will be back on Thursday with a Coffee with Karen. So bye for now.
Coffee with Karen podcast, a weekly chat show discussing everything from holistic health to current affairs from a mental, physical and spiritual perspective. Get your weekly cup of positivity with a sprinkling of woo-woo.